I think we cannot make a difference in the life of someone we don't know about. We cannot have an effective solution without involving the community that have been affected.
Welcome to the Young Changemakers Podcast Season 4. In this episode, we will be talking to inspiring young people from all around the world to explore how they are making a positive change in their communities. This podcast is a Global Changemakers production. To learn more about how you can also make a difference, visit our website, global-changemakers.net. Enjoy the episode.
So hello everybody and welcome to the Young Changemakers podcast. Today I'm very excited to be chatting with Niall Deng. Unfortunately, I haven't had the pleasure to meet Niall in person, but he is also a global changemaker and was selected as a participant in 2019. So Niall's currently in lockdown and quarantine in Canada. Yeah, welcome to the podcast, Niall, and I'm really, really enthusiastic to share your story today.
Yeah, thank you, George. It's really great to be here and to be able to speak to a wonderful community and share my story and experiences.
How's the last almost 2 weeks been in your quarantine? You're telling me they're not giving you the best food there and you're disappointed in the flavor. So.
Yes, you know, I feel like in East Africa, where I've lived for the last 11 years, people care much about the taste of the food. Like if you bring someone food, they would like to taste it first to see if it's sweet. I get used to that. So most of the food I was eating like are very delicious, very sweet. And then I come here where I found out that they don't care about the taste. They care about if the food is healthy or not. We don't care about that where I come from. So like they bring raw vegetables where I come from. They cook vegetables. And yeah, they bring raw vegetables. They bring a lot of burgers. I wasn't used to burgers. And it was like crazy in the first few days. The food was like very tasteless. Everything I was eating was tasteless. But I'm now getting used to it.
Well, that's not
and,
bad.
And also, you know, the other thing was like, yeah, just being in one room without going out. Like I come from a place where I used to move a lot and we used to have like project in different places. So today I'm here, tomorrow I'm there, the next day I'm there. So here I come and then I was like, look, in one, today is my 12th day. And I was like, what's happened? So it took a few days to digest the whole reality of being in one room for 14 days. And then, yeah, now I'm doing great.
Yeah, I can imagine it must be difficult, first of all, on the food front. I mean, how about you scout out those cupboards behind you and look for a bit of salt? I know a lot of people back in Kenya love to pour salt onto their food. But if that's not available, I'm sure you can adapt.
Yeah, so I ask them for salt and spice sometime. And what they bring me is not spice at all. I'm like... I need something better off or spicy that will burn my mouth. So like they bring me something I had all of it into the mainland. The taste is still the same.
Is there a window there for you to look out and sort of see what you're going to be faced with when you're able to leave quarantine?
Yeah, I have a window right in front of me. I was talking to a friend and he was like, hey, so you are in Canada and you can't see Canada. I'm like, I have a small window in front of me where I can see like there's a parking lot. I'm in a hotel, so there are like, other hotels around, and there's a road, which is the main road, so it gets very busy during the day. And I just, when I'm bored, I just love to come and sit and push outside.
Sure. And Niall, all jokes aside, this is quite an amazing time for you in your personal journey and your life itself to be able to, it's your first time to sort of really experience life outside of Kakuma, and you're now in Canada to pursue your bachelor's degree in journalism. How's that make you feel? And I'm sure there's a whole range of emotions you're feeling.
Yeah, so it's been a journey. I come from a place I felt, as much as I try to feel present, it's very hard because most of the time I think about all the incredible young people in Kakuma that I've been able to work with. Also want to go to university, but they don't have that opportunity. Right across the world, only 3% of college-age, refugee youth have an opportunity to go to school. And I'm grateful for the opportunity, but I feel like there's more that I need to do to be able to help other young people who are in the camp, who could be anywhere else, who are refugees. Were displaced people to get on the same routes like myself and be able to pursue higher education because it's very important. So yeah, initially my idea was to do a bachelor in journalism, but I'm changing that now. So I want to do a major in global studies, looking at international affairs, peace and conflict. with a minor in journalism, digital journalism.
That sounds incredible. So Niall, you've lived in Kakuma for the last 12 years of your life. Could you sort of backtrack back to the beginning and maybe share, I know it's difficult in such a short podcast, just share to our listeners a bit more about your story and how you got into the work that you're doing today?
Yes. So I was born and raised in Ethiopia. So my family has been affected by war intergenerationally. My dad fled first South Sudanese Civil War, the first Sudanese Civil War, more than 5 decades ago and settled in Ethiopia. Where I was born and raised. And it was a lovely neighborhood. So my dad, you know, lived in a refugee camp for a few years and sought citizenship. So I was born an Ethiopian citizen with all the privilege of being a citizen. And I felt home for some time. It wasn't really home because most of the evening I would sit down, my dad would narrate to me the past, you know, his lifetime on a small village by the Nile in South Sudan. And you know, I always wanted to have an opportunity to go back home, but I never had that opportunity. But I was able, you know, to try to find home in Ethiopia. Mm. And I was able to go to school, play with kids from the neighborhood or the river, and in the evening sit down and listen to the radio with my dad. And in return, all that vanished away. One morning, our village was attacked by Han militias. My dad woke me up in the morning dark, and he told me to stuff a few clothes and a drinking bottle into a small paper bag and join a group of women and children. Where I come from, the community, men don't open. Often leave when any time a community is attacked, they send away kids and children and women and men remain behind. So my dad has to remain behind. As a man, five, I didn't want to go alone, but he asked me to go. I saw houses burning. I saw someone on the ground. I hear gunshots, people screaming. And I was just 11 years old. It was all a crazy and traumatic experience. And then the journey begins. So we walk and then rode on a truck, walk again and get to Kakuma. You know, it took us 2 weeks to reach Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, where I've lived for the last 11 years. And getting to Kakuma, you know, I was lost. I was devastated. I was frustrated. I knew no one in the camp. Only the people I came with. I got to the camp with two families. The UNHCR reception, where, you know, we registered, we had ration cards, given food. We were given a place to live. And because I was under the age of 18, I was to be assigned a foster family. So I was assigned a foster family. Mm-hmm. A pastor in South Sudan took me in. I lived with them. And I think the turning point is when I went back to school again. So I was able to found hope, solace, and healing in education. The school gave me a service space where I could think about a glowing future again. I was happy that whenever I go to school and sit in a classroom, I'll think about my future instead of my nightmare. Mm-hmm. But I was also very passionate about storytelling, and I love telling my story to other young refugees that I met in my classroom. I sit in a classroom with 150 kids from all across East Africa who have been victims of war and conflict. And they told me that they have been through the same journey. So someone who lost his parents, he lost the whole family, had to walk to get safety. And I saw so many kids who were traumatized that they lost hope every day. And the Kakuma refugee camp is a place where you woke up with a lot of hope. So you see kids in the morning going to school, you have hope. But when the sun set, you know that this is just another day. So you might be confined to the camp for 20 years, for 30 years. Most of my friends have been confined to Kakuma for more than 2 decades, and they don't know when they'll get out of that. So I saw kids who lost hope. Sometimes they feel like dropping out of school. They feel like leaving school at all because you don't see a future after that. In Kenya, they have the incoming policy. You cannot work. You cannot move freely. For you to even leave the camp, you need to get a special document from the government. It's very hard to start a business. Mm. And so many young people lost hope. And I feel like hope is very important because that is what keep me moving as a pastor. That is what keep me to go to school because I wanted to be a journalist and tell the story of my country. So one day I decided to bring together my friends, three. I put together futures and I said, let's come and talk about our future and, you know, our stories, our experiences. Let's talk about communities. What can we do about our communities? And that gave young people a space where you could hear from someone who gone through the same experience with you, but who care for hope. And you see them passing education, you know, with passion because they see it as a ticket to a better future. And that helped a lot of young people to be able to have hope again. And I say yes. So after the first gathering, I felt like, yes, this is something that can work. I asked our teacher to give us permission to meet every Wednesday. But on Wednesday, they have club day at this school. We come together every Wednesday, meet, and then we start running a mentorship session at this school where we bring together young people, you know, who have been like among the best in the whole country, got a scholarship to go and study in Nairobi, mm-hmm. go and study in other places. I bring them to come and inspire these young people at the school. And we used to have this gathering every Wednesday. You know, we start running workshop in peace because, you know, I see peace as something that has to start, you know, at the individual level where you decide by yourself to ask peace with yourself and be able to spread that. You decide to have life within you. We have workshop on forgiveness, on peace, on leadership. And we talk about challenges in our community and how we can find solutions to those challenges. That is how Refugee Peace Ambassador started. And that is how whole work started.
Incredible. Look, Niall, it seems like some common themes I've picked up. First of all, I'd like you to unravel perhaps the question around you left what you would have considered home at such a young age, at the age of 11, you said. And just in my mind, I believe like a lot of young people during their formative years is so critical towards their future prospects, where they go in life. Did you feel at home when you arrived in Kakuma?
It takes some time to identify the feeling of being a refugee, having your identity taken away from you. You don't have control over it. Like, the document I used today do not have my correct nationality. They do not have my correct date of birth, but I have to use them. You know, I felt like it's absolute time when I travel with this document because I felt like, you know, I don't have control over my identity. That is one of the most hardest things, where you are in a place where you don't have control over your identity, you don't have dignity, like you're not allowed to work. So you could see people who work very hard in school, they got some of the best schools in the whole country, got a scholarship, go to the University of Nairobi, the best university in the whole country, get a degree, come back and sit in Kakuma because you don't have a work permit and no one is going to give you that. Those were really hard. And I was like catched by all those forces against me that I felt like are stopping me. I saw the term refugee as something that was really bad. But, you know, after staying in the camp, after absorbing the whole situation and find myself that this is it, this is the reality I have to face it. That is when I say, yes, I need to have a different mindset. And I start training myself. The first thing I did is I started educating myself about people who have been refugees before. And I saw so many people from all across the world who are refugees in one point in their life, but have become incredible people. They do amazing things. Now I go online, educate myself about these people, and that is when I start building hope again. I see the term refugee, you know, as a badge of resilience, and I say, yes, I can do this. If someone like this can do, you know, I can do it. I later, you know, came to realize that home is the people around. Mm-hmm. So I start having an incredible community of people around me. And so I would say because of the people around me, I would say that I found home in Kakuma.
It's quite important to note that you just said that you believe you see yourself as a refugee. It gives you hope to build resilience. And I believe that's exactly what you've done through all your commitments to those people around you in Kakuma. You've taken a particular focus on developing your own education, but also developing the education of the refugees in Kakuma. Could you please go on to explain a bit more about some of the initiatives you've worked on? I know you're particularly interested in focusing on youth education and leadership and on entrepreneurial development for youth. Yeah, just if you wouldn't mind explaining some of those core initiatives you've established in Kakuma.
Yes, so education, you know, leadership and entrepreneurship are very important to me because I look, you know, at the refugee experience as something that is stay with you for the rest of your life. But I also look at it, you know, as something that you can use to be able to build your country. Education, which is one thing I focus on, you know, give you the opportunity to secure a more full and brighter future. And that is why I think young people should have access to it. I see that's the only key to a better future when you're caught in a refugee camp for years. And leadership, I look at it at the angle of these are, you know, the people, the community in exile are the people who will go and rebuild this country. So they need to have leadership skills, you know, that will allow them to go back as agent of positive change and social transformation. No leaders will go and try to get revenge. So the leadership you focus on is learning from people like Nelson Mandela, who have been in prison but came back and has for peace. Now, I want to teach these young people that as long as they'll be in exile, in refugee camps, displacement context, when they go back to their country, they go back as leaders of positive change and social transformation. And entrepreneurship, you know, is to give these young people an opportunity to use their skill they have gained in the camp to identify gaps in their community and to ask themselves, what is missing in my community and how can I get paid for it? So trying to identify gaps in your community, using the skill you have, you know, to earn a living, but also bridging those gaps. So one of the initiatives I've worked on is Refugee Peace Ambassadors. This is the first core initiative I started while I was still in high school. You know, our main focus is on building young people as ethical leaders and social entrepreneurs and trying, you know, to enhance peaceful coexistence between different communities in the camp. The time as a population, over 200,000 refugees who come from 10 different nationalities and background and contexts and different religions.
Yeah.
Sometimes tensions arise between different communities, the refugee themselves, and even with the host communities. So we try to bring these communities together. We have workshop on peace throughout the camps. We have community dialogue for peaceful coexistence. We bring together different communities. We bring together women. We bring together children. We bring together the elders to come and talk about ways people can live peacefully in their communities. We have game and sport activities that bring young people together. We have a mentorship program for girls running through schools. So this is what we do for the Refugee Peace Ambassadors. You know, the other project I also work on a lot, you know, is a Step Up. So at Step Up, you know, we try to reskill refugees in marketable skills like social media marketing, coding, web developments, and help them connect them to global opportunities. Myself, I've been able to provide consultancy in education in social media developments and communication to companies across the world, try to help young people use their skill to earn a living. So reskill them in these marketable skills and connect them to global opportunities. Now we have more than 200 young people in Kakuma that we have trained and that we're helping connect employers across the world. And then the other project that I've also worked on is Kakuma Innovation Lab School. So this is an innovation hub where young people come to learn, they come to do research. We have Skype interactions between students in different continents. We have teachers from across the world in more than 60 countries offering free Skype lessons to refugees in Kakuma in math, in science, in English and social studies. So we have young people coming, they have access to internet. So we have a hub where there's internet, have Android laptops, and we have an offline library on Wikipedia where young people can come and be able to learn different stuff online. Like in Kakuma, these schools, you know, do not have infrastructure like a library. You will find a school of more than 3,000 people have just a few books.
Mm-hmm.
So this student can come to the hub and be able to access education material online.
Okay. Now, I guess you must see a lot of different types of people being in Kakuma from different, such an array of different cultures and backgrounds. Have you seen them, first of all, being stripped of hope? And then how have you seen education and the work you've done around providing youth in particular in education? Have you seen that being used as a tool to actually reestablish hope and purpose and energy in these individuals?
Yes. Yeah. So it's very important. So most of the work we do, we start first with building hope. Hope is a very important thing. It's what keeps every single human being in this world keep moving forward. We all have challenges. Mm-hmm. Even Bill Gates have challenges. Even Jeff Bezos have challenges. But when you have hope, when you believe that there's light at the end of the tunnel, when you see hope, you know that education is a key that you can use to still secure a more greater future for yourself and your family, you know, in the face of all the challenges you face in a refugee camp. That keeps you moving forward. So most of the things we do, you know, is to restill hope, help young people get on the right track for education, helping them have access to educational programs. So we do a lot of application support, help young people apply to different educational programs that are available in the camp, be it secondary, you know, be higher education, because when they get on that track, help them in a very, it goes a long way.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying the episode so far. At Global Changemakers, we support youth to create a positive change towards more inclusive, fair, and sustainable communities. We do this by providing skills development, capacity building, mentoring, and grants. Head to our website, global-changemakers.net, to join our programs and use our resources. Now on with the rest of the episode.
I mean, I've never been to a refugee camp myself, but I can imagine in Kakuma there must be people with such strong identities and in trying to shape their own future and provide a better future for those around you. It'll be also be interesting, I think, to hear maybe if we reconnect down the track, how you compare a sense of community in Kakuma to that of your university in Canada.
It's very, very different. I think the sense of community that is in Kakuma refugee camp is incredible. I mean, in a first world country where kids come from healthy family, they will never think twice about, let's say, buying a $2 Coke. But you know, you're in a refugee camp where you have nothing. Hope is the only thing you have. But you see people who have nothing, you know, coming together to support each other. You will see people who have challenges throughout their life coming together to help. So in Kakuma, we share everything. Happiness together, you know, we share love together, we share laughter together. People come and celebrate the little progress one person is making. Let's say kids secure a scholarship to go to the US. You'll see the whole community coming together to celebrate.
Wow.
So that sense of community is like incredible. I was talking to a friend here in Canada, and he was telling me like he was shocked when he got here in the first place. He come from Zambia. Yeah. And he says, in Zambia, you know, when it rains and you run, someone will call you and say, you don't have to run in the rain. Come inside the house. But he told me, in Canada, you try that, they'll call the police. You don't go to someone else because it is raining and you start entering. But in Kakuma refugee camp, no one will ever allow you to walk. Like, someone will get out of the house and say, hey, you don't have to run, it is raining. You don't have to go and find a place somewhere, yes. A community center. Come inside my house. They'll give you a share, give you food, give you water. Yes. So it's very different. The sense of community that is in Kakuma, it's incredible. I couldn't believe it. Someone has nothing, but they share that nothing mm-hmm. that they have.
I think there's an incredible lesson to be learned from even what we're seeing now with the impacts of COVID-19. I think people are starting to realize like the importance of spreading like a form of love, even though it sounds a bit cliche. Like, once you spread your own individual love, that's going to help. And I'd love to get your take on what you think. What is community to you? Because through looking out for your neighbors, and I think if we can continue to do that when we face tough times, that's the importance of peace building and community building at large. I'm going back to your work in Kakuma. I'm not sure if you touched on it, but I'm interested to hear more about the Sky School initiative, because it seems like you've really benefited from that. Could you explain a bit more about that?
Yes. So they have now actually changed the name to Amala. The education, it used to be Sky School. Sky School is a global, trying to establish a global high school for refugees. As I said earlier, one of the main challenges refugees face is that they don't have access to higher education opportunities. So Sky School, is trying to establish a higher education high school refugee program that will help young people transition to university. And they do that partnership with UWC and other organizations across the world. They also run short courses in peace, in leadership, in English. And when I finished my high school, as I said earlier, I was very passionate about peace because of my background. So I enrolled in a Sky School peace building program. Mm-hmm. And this program was incredible. It taught me about a lot of things. It helped me recognize my hope of going through different concepts, like having a growth mindset. Taught me, about what is peace, reason for peace and conflict at the local and global levels, and ways, technique I can help build peace in the community, but also national and also at a global level. And those learning were eye-opening to me, because I come from a country where every single day I worry that another bomb is going to drop, another child is going to die, someone else is fleeing tonight. So I was always thinking about what I can do to help, and this guy is going to help me, have access to those learnings about things I can do in my own life, in my community, to be able to build peace, because peace is start with yourself. You spread mm-hmm. that to your family and go to the community. So Sky School was like opening, it was like an incredible opportunity for me. And it would help me have hope, it helped me sharpen my purpose and the work I do today.
And it seems like you've really taken advantage of those opportunities that's come your way, and used, I guess, education as being your sword, so to speak, because it's seen you carve through many different challenges and given yourself a voice. I'm reading this book at the moment called Dead Age, written by Dambisa Moyo. I'm not sure if you've heard of her, but I find it quite interesting.
Yeah,
She's a Zambian economist, and she's worked for Goldman Sachs and the World Bank. So she's quite up there in terms of her training and education. But she presents the argument that the most important challenge we face today is, she says, to destroy the myth that foreign aid actually works. Her argument is that in our modern and globalized economy, aid doesn't promise long-term sustainable growth. And her argument is that it helps feed corruption. I'm just, because I know in Kakuma there must be a lot of foreign aid, and that's seen as the way out, and that alleviates a lot of the suffering and poverty. What's your take? I know we're taking a big jump away from our original discussion, but I just thought I'd...
Yeah, that is a brilliant question. Yeah, I've heard about her. I've also listened to some of talk. And I agree with our most of the things. I've lived in Kakuma for 11 years. I've worked with different agencies, the UN agencies that control the humanitarian world. And, you know, last year I was asked by the United Nations to share my thoughts on UN 75, the United Nations Time 75 last year. And one thing I say is that this need to have democratization of the UN. There's need for more meaningful inclusive of communities that have been affected. I think we cannot make a difference in the life of someone we don't know about. We cannot have an effective solution without involving the community that have been affected. So I think they need to not often look at the aspects of bringing out food and give it to people, but you need to look at from the aspect of helping people, empowering them, you know, to be able to solve their challenges, giving them the tools to solve some of the challenges in their communities, helping them have a seat, finding solution to some of the challenges they face, and listening to their voice, saying, you know, that young people need to be given a seat at the table. But I don't think young people or these communities need a seat at the table. I think the table should be given to them. They understand themselves better. They understand their challenges better. They just need these tools to be able to find solutions for those challenges.
Definitely. And I think that's so important to hone in on, because, you know, we hear the world leaders say, how are we going to stop the effects of a changing climate and the refugee crisis is getting worse and worse? How are we going to solve these problems in 50 years' time? But the solutions have to come now. And I think youth and people like yourself, Niall, understand that we are the current decision makers. We're not the future leaders, we are the current leaders. So, I mean, that's a bold statement, but it's up to us to solve the problems. It's not, we shouldn't have to wait to wait until we get into positions of power. It's about taking initiative and I think identifying solutions from the ground up. And that's exactly what you're doing, and you're obviously identified a big need in educating those who otherwise wouldn't have access to that, the level of education that you've had. So I guess you must be very excited about enrolling in your undergraduate program there in Canada. What's your hope and vision for yourself, and what do you aim to do with this education once you finish university? I know we're speaking a few years down the track, but I just wanted to get your take on your future plans and endeavors.
Yes. You know, one of my main hope, you know, is to work with organizations that dominate the world of the displaced to be able to bring local voice to the table, to make sure, you know, that communities that are in crisis are heard, but to make sure that the voices of these communities are included in these decision-making processes. I'm in a space where I can have, you know, access to a global stage than when I was in Kakuma. And I want to use this to the best of my capability to highlight the issues that make it almost impossible for young refugees to access education, to have a better chance alive. So, you know, try to highlight this issue, try to share my story, and be able to work with governments and with agencies to localize solution-making processes at these bodies, you know, where they look more at the local level. When you look at the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, there is no way we can achieve global goals if we don't have local solutions. It has to start at the local level. And I think that is the most important thing. So trying to bring that perspective just to this different type of world, people like OCD in New York and, you know, in Geneva, exactly. I think office a solution for someone in Kakuma. But now using my privilege of being here to go and knock at their doors and say, you need to go and listen to these communities. They understand your challenges better.
Most certainly. And I think empowering youth and providing the formal platform of education is so important. Yeah, you've done exactly that. I'd like also now to perhaps gain a bit of insight and then ask for some so-called advice, I guess, for you to share. Niall, you've had an immense amount of adversity and challenges in your life, though you've no doubt tackled them and pulled through with extreme resilience and, I think, a sense of confidence. What would be your advice to people who may be going through a difficult time or who are struggling to find that level of resilience?
One of the main things I do in life is I don't see challenges as such challenges. I see them as learning opportunities. I think in every single challenge we face in life, there's an opportunity in it. And sometimes the door can be very small, that we only see the bigger door, which has the challenge. But if we look closely, you know, we can see the opportunity. So depth challenges as learning opportunities. There's something crucial they can teach us. So that is one thing I used to do. I do a lot. And, you know, to young people, one of the most important thing I tell young people is that this is about heart. When you talk about the future, it's young people. I think when you look at climate change, we will face full impact of climate change. We'll inherit corrupt system. We see weak health system, you know, with COVID-19. We see corrupt governments across the world. So we are the one losing. So this is about health. This is not about anybody health. You know, this is not about the leaders we try to bring our voices to. This is about health. So we need to break barriers in our community. We need to raise our voices and say we need change now. We need to start running projects in our community, empowering people, empowering local voices. So using our voices, highlight issues in our community, saying that we need change now because this is our time, our turn, our future. I think this is our time to take charge.
And I think that's what's so powerful about, and you must agree with the global changemakers community, is that we are able to find localized solutions to such global problems. And that is identified through the power of diversity. I mean, when I went to Switzerland and attended the 2019 summit, I was blown away by just how incredible the diversity of each person in the room. I mean, there was 60 young change makers, and I was interacting with people like yourself, refugees from Jaxana Soro, who was also on my previous podcast, to people who are from privileged and more developed countries in places such as Switzerland. But by bringing those worlds together, we close the gap and we start to really hone in on these vital solutions that require urgent action. Niall Deng, I think we've had such an incredible conversation today. And I would love to continue to chat, but I know you've got a lot more to do in isolation and you haven't yet. I mean, your dinner's been sitting there getting cold. So I think it's time for you to hook in, whether you like that food or not.
Probably I will like it. Thank you. It was great, you know, speaking with you and sharing my, you know, my experiences and story inside. And I definitely agree with you, you know, on the work of global change makers. You know, now they have programs like the Virtual Summit that now bring together even more young people. So I think, you know, these networks are really important for young people to be able to have a platform where they can share ideas, exchange experiences, and be able to support each other in their work and have a global impact, you know, while making local solutions.
Excellent. Yeah, it's been such a pleasure chatting you today, and I look forward to reconnecting soon and hearing how your studies are progressing and how you adapt to life in Canada.
Yeah, talk again soon.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you want to reach out, you can contact us via email at info@global-changemakers.net. Send us your comments, questions, or suggestions. Join our global community of young changemakers on Instagram @globalchangemakers, Twitter @wearegcm, and Facebook. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, and support. To help us continue to inspire more young people, share this podcast on your social media or contribute with your donations. Find all the info and links in the comments below, and see you in the next episode.